Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. More Americans are thinking third party, almost 15%, the latest polls say. Green Party candidate Dr. Jill Stein has opened her arms wide to liberal voters not going for Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. She's argued that they shouldn't opt for the less bad, as she puts it, choice. What she stands for, an emergency push to a green economy, tuition-free higher education, Medicare for all, a much-reduced U.S. military. She's polling at 3, 4, 5%. This hour On Point, Dr. Jill Stein makes the case that she deserves your vote. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you following Jill Stein, her Green New Deal? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And welcome to those watching us on Facebook Live right now. Anybody can check it out on Facebook. Joining me now in the studio is Dr. Jill Stein. This is her second run for president as the Green Party candidate. She lost to Barack Obama in 2012, got 0.36% of the vote. She also ran for governor of Massachusetts as the Green Rainbow Party candidate in 2002 and 2010. She's a medical doctor. Jill Stein, welcome back to On Point.
Great to be with you, Tom.
Looks like every time you run for president, we sit you down right here. Here's the sound of you just last Saturday at the University of Houston accepting the nomination of the Green Party for the presidency.
I'm honored beyond words to be your candidate, and I'm so honored to be running for president of the United States with the Green Party, the only party of, by, and for the people.
And right there at that convention saying, Hillary Clinton is not the answer.
We are the ones we've been waiting for. Hillary Clinton is the problem. She is not the solution to Donald Trump. We are the solution. We are the ones we've been waiting for. This is our moment.
Jill Stein is with me in the studio. What do you mean this is your moment, Dr. Stein?
You know, it's an amazing election, Tom. You gotta say. The American people have had it with the rigged economy. They've had it with the rigged political system that keeps us locked into that rigged economy. And they are not sitting happy with the candidates from the Democratic and Republican parties, who are the most disliked and the most untrusted of candidates for president in our history. And the American people are calling for something else. I'm the only candidate that is not poisoned by the money of big corporations, by lobbyists, by super PACs. So my campaign can actually stand up for what it is that the American people need. That is an emergency jobs program that will fix this emergency of the climate crisis, that will end the debt that's trapping an entire generation of students into economic servitude for the foreseeable future with no way to get out, that will end this foreign policy of regime change, of catastrophic wars that are making us less secure, not more secure. So the American people are hitting the wall. We're seeing massive defections from the Republican Party. We're seeing the Democratic Party move to the right, and its progressives really
Right. Everybody said it's moved to the left under the influence of Bernie Sanders.
Well, if you look at the voluntary platform, which is non-binding, yes, there are a few steps that it has taken, which are good voluntary steps. But on the other hand, they could not even pretend to oppose fracking. They could not pretend to oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They could not really step up on Palestinian human rights, for example. And if you look at Hillary Clinton's policies, she may give lip service to things that the Sanders campaign forced her to do. But if you follow the money, things are not different. This is a politician with a long track record of service to the war industry, of service to Wall Street and the bankers who fund her, and service to the Walmart-type economy, which is very harmful to workers, to women, to families, and not serving the really urgent needs of the American people. We've got talk. But it's really important to look at the walk.
Justine, what would you do that Hillary Clinton or and Donald Trump would not do in the White House?
Oh, boy, just about everything. So
let's hear it.
For starters, I am calling for a New Deal, like the New Deal that got us out of the Great Depression, but in this case, a Green New Deal so that we can fix the emergency of the economy at the same time that we fix the emergency of the climate crisis.
What's it mean?
That means 20 million jobs. It means we create jobs. We fund them. We nationally fund them in a massive stimulus program so that we are creating good jobs that transition us to this green economy. 100% clean renewable energy by 2030. That is an emergency crash program, a national wartime scale mobilization to address the crisis of climate change.
20 million jobs is a lot of jobs. People doing what exactly?
So these jobs would transition our energy system to 100% wind, water, and sun by 2030. So that's going to take a lot of people creating a lot of jobs in green renewable energy, in conservation. We also call for a healthy and sustainable food supply because so many of our carbon emissions are actually coming from our industrial food system that just also happens to be a real problem for our health as well. And we call for public transportation, for revamping our transit system so that we have affordable public transit, which is renewably powered, energy efficient, and which dovetails with safe sidewalks and bike paths so that we can actually use our muscle power as part of our transportation system and restoring critical ecosystems as well.
100% non-fossil fuel energy base by the year 2030, and that's taking nuclear out of the equation.
That's right.
Is that realistic? Is that doable under any presidency?
It will clearly require a sense of national emergency. And my point as a medical doctor, as a student of public health is that the emergency we have right now is absolutely equivalent to the emergency when Pearl Harbor was bombed at the outset of the Second World War.
Describe the dimensions of the emergency. What is the emergency you're talking about?
Okay. The emergency, for example, is that tomorrow here in Boston, we're expecting a heat index of 101 degrees. The emergency is the drought that we've had here in Massachusetts, which is hurting our food production. The emergency is the forest fires that are raging in California and the drought in the Southwest and many places around the world. It's the super storms that we're facing. And in particular, that emergency is the predictions that the science is now making. That includes Jim Hansen, the foremost climate scientist, who said a year ago that we could look to 20, 30, 40, 50 feet of sea level rise as soon as 2060. Now a new study described by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, saying that they had just received a, and I quote, "Oh my God" report on the status of the ice sheets in the Antarctic. They're saying that we could see as much as 9 feet of sea level rise as soon as 2050. So the data is increasingly pointing to a devastating civilization-ending major catastrophic impact very soon. And if we're going to head that off, tomorrow is not too soon. This is an absolute all-out emergency. It makes Pearl Harbor look like small potatoes.
So the green in Green Party really is the foundation of your view of the world, more than, you name it, equity or opportunity or anything else. You really start with the environmental challenge?
Well, I would say where I start, I came into it, I think, on the environmental end. But what I think all of us have learned is that you're not going to solve the environmental problem unless you are simultaneously solving the other issues of justice. So we seek climate justice, but we, you know, which is essentially, it's not only justice to African American communities, for example, or justice to the third world who are really being hit the hardest by climate. It's also justice to our younger generation and to future generations. This is about ensuring that we have a world that we can survive in. But in order for us to create ecological justice, we also must create economic justice and justice for workers and justice for women and racial and labor justice, which is why we hook up the climate solution with an economic solution. Because for most people, the economy has not recovered. They've got low-wage, part-time, temporary jobs, if they're lucky enough to have a job. And average wages for workers are barely above the poverty level. So we're saying we can only solve these two together. The industry and the powers that be tell us we've got to pick one or the other. And that's how they basically keep us divided and conquered. We're saying the only way we can do this is as a massive mobilization that actually restores justice, economic justice, ensures the right to a good job for everyone, a living wage job, as part of this massive nationwide mobilization to achieve 100% clean renewable energy by 2030.
You've reached out hard to Bernie Sanders supporters. He has said, dear supporters, vote for Hillary Clinton because otherwise you're going to have Donald Trump in the White House. What do you say?
You know, I understand where he's coming from. Bernie comes from a generation of people that really looked to the Democratic Party as the party of the New Deal. But now
he left it. He went independent. And now, nevertheless, he's saying, be careful.
Yes, yes, indeed. But I think his presumption is that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats can fix this. If you look at what is lifting up Donald Trump, he's not, you know, he's not the only person out there. There is a right-wing extremist movement in this country, certainly in Europe. We're seeing it all over the place. Mm-hmm. It's
nationalist populist.
Nationalist populist. You could call it leaning towards neo-fascist. Very worrisome movement. And the drivers of this are very clear. The drivers of this are an economic policy that has really benefited bankers and billionaires worldwide, and especially in this country, to the detriment of working people.
Hillary Clinton said at the convention, we're going to have those Wall Street people pay higher taxes to help fix our problems and give us a better future.
And she won't share her speeches that she was paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for. You know, Hillary and Bill have earned $153 million providing their secret speeches to the economic elite. And they have a track record for serving them, including Wall Street deregulation, which created the meltdown that created the economic misery supporting Donald Trump and bringing the likes of his demagoguery to the fore. That will not solve this problem. Bernie himself said it's only truly economic progressive policies that are going to cure that. And we're not seeing that from Hillary.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour with Green Party candidate for the presidency, Jill Stein, about her run, her Green Party vision, her critique of the way things are now, her vision of how they might be. Are you with Jill Stein on the green economy, debt-free higher education? We'll look at that. Medicare for all. Are you ready for her Green New Deal? And if you're a supporter, what's been your path to Jill Stein? What about the Bernie Sanders warning that anything other than a vote for Hillary Clinton might well mean a Donald Trump presidency? Here's the sound of Jill in Houston last week. She gave her acceptance speech for the Green Party nomination. You hear the chant in the hall, we are the 99%. Jill Stein is with me in the studio. We're on Facebook Live if you want to check that out at On Point Radio. Victoria is calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Victoria, you're on with Jill Stein. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I was calling, Dr. Stein, first I just wanted to say thanks again for running. I voted for you in 2012. I was excited that you're back again in 2016. And we did manage to get the number of signatures to get you on the ballot here in Nebraska. So we're very excited about that.
Thank you.
I was hoping that maybe you could talk a little bit more about what you wanted to do with student loan debt.
Right.
Personally, I'm sitting with $72,000. In student loan debt, and I've not been able to land a job that's really given a return on an investment. My partner also has quite a bit of student loan debt. Service industry is big here in Omaha, especially. We have almost like a restaurant per block. So mm-hmm. There's kind of a joke that we have some of the most educated kitchen lines in the country here in Omaha. So I just was curious if you could talk a little bit more about the relief that you'll be giving the student loans.
Thank you, Victoria. Thank you so much, because this really is a gateway issue as far as I'm concerned. And my first priority, if I have the honor of turning the White House into a greenhouse, my first priority is to cancel student debt, like we did for the bankers, the crooks on Wall Street who crashed the economy. We owe it to the young people to bail them out.
All of it.
Yes, all of it. In my view, higher education is a right, not a privilege, and in fact, it's a necessity in today's economy. Much like high school education was essential in the 20th century, now you need a college degree or some form of post-secondary school education in order to survive in this economy. And there could be no greater stimulus for the economy than to liberate an entire generation which is locked into Victoria's circumstances. 42 million people, by the way, that is a plurality of the presidential vote. So this is potentially how we don't have to go into this election and split the vote. We could go into this election and flip the vote and ensure that our younger generation is leading the way, not only on reviving our economy, creating the economy for the future, but also carrying the agenda for justice that the younger generation embraces because they have been the latest cash cow in a predatory economy.
We see 42 million is a lot of people in debt, and the debt is very, very large and very burdensome. We totally get it. $1 trillion plus. How do you pay for all that canceled debt?
What I'm proposing, actually, is that we do similar to what we did for the banks, where we And for Wall Street, we came up with a lot of money really quick. And it turns out that the Fed can basically create this money in order to buy up that debt. 80% of it already belongs to the government. The Fed can buy up this debt and then essentially cancel it. That amounts to an expansion.
An equivalent of quantitative easing?
It's really?
It's, like it's not the same thing.
It's a little different because what we're saying is that the Fed then just holds that debt. They're not going to ask for it to be paid back. So this is an expansion of the money supply at a time when my economists tell me we badly need to expand the money supply in a way that will actually infuse from the ground up into the economy and provide the stimulus package of our dreams, not only because of the infusion of an expanded money supply, but also because we are liberating a generation of young people who's currently, they are hung out to dry. They're working 2 and 3 part-time jobs like Victoria was describing. They have skills to use. They have vision and passion. There could be no greater way to remake our economy into the economy that we need for the 21st century. So in my view, this is absolutely a win-win for all of us.
Danny in Tampa, Florida. Danny, you're on with Jill Stein. Thanks for calling.
How you doing, Tom? How you doing, Jill? I actually had two questions. And first of all, I like what you're doing, Jill. I mean, I think the two-party system is horrible and needs to go away. I like your ideas for the working class. I like that you're against the TPP. But there is a few positions I have concerns with, and that is your positions on the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. Now, I read on your site that you're for an assault weapons ban, but I think there's a lot of confusion with this, as assault weapons are just a buzzword for semi-automatic rifles, which are like handguns, and even the New York Times admits that it's a political buzzword. I wanted to know if you're willing to reverse your positions on the so-called assault weapons ban, as well as these magazine bans, which do nothing to reduce crime. I mean, we've seen that gun bans don't work in Germany or France with the terrorist attacks. And another thing I wanted to ask you about is voter ID laws, because, I mean, if you look at the DNC leaks and what Hillary's been doing, you know, there has been some irregularities in places like California, Chicago, and whether you would support voter ID laws to protect against voter fraud. I mean, because a lot of Bernie voters basically got cheated out of their votes.
Danny, may I just ask where you're coming from here? If you're choosing between Jill and somebody else, who else?
I'm leaning Trump right now, but if Jill reverses her positions on these things, I think I could definitely vote for her and millions of others. So, you know, just like the working class, gun owners are kind of getting the short end of the stick.
Jill, what do you say?
Great.
Assault rifle ban, voter ID.
Yeah, so let me just say, Danny, I understand where you're coming from, and I do not challenge the Second Amendment. I'm not looking to do away with it. But I am looking to implement common sense gun laws so that we can rein in this epidemic of violence. And I want to say at the same time that, you know, that I sympathize with the notion that people don't trust government, that there is fear and loathing out there. But I think, You know, it's really important that we create a new kind of government, which is not controlled by the big corporations and the banks.
Danny wants to know if you would take the assault rifle ban off the table and the big magazine ban with all that ammunition off the table. Those are part of your position now.
They are, yes. And they are part of my position for very good reason. And I think the American
people... So the answer
people,
is no, you
That's
wouldn't.
Right. I would not take them off the table. But, you know, I would love to have a longer discussion at some time because I think there needs to be discussion about gun laws and about violence in this country because we have an epidemic where everyone is caught in the crossfire. And as a physician, I can say I'm well aware that having a gun in the home makes it 22 times more likely that that gun is actually going to be used on a member of the household rather than to protect you from an intruder. So I think the real information about guns needs to get out there. They actually put us at risk.
What about voter ID? I don't recall the connection to the DNC leaks, but
that's right.
But Danny's concerned about voter ID. He's for these laws. Lots of Democrats and liberals have said, well, those just tamp down minority voting, and they've been very much opposed to voter ID, and so there isn't that big a scale of problem there. But he wants you to come toward him on that one.
I think he's merging in his mind, and I can see why, because there's a lot of confusion out there on the media and in the public mind. There is a lot of election, shall we, you know, he used the word irregularities, potentially fraud. There are.
Is there? Exactly.
Well,
what are you talking
not
about?
Voter ID. No, I'm talking about the fact that, what was it, some 20, 30,000 voters went to the polls in Brooklyn and discovered they had been removed from the voting rolls, that 2 million votes didn't get counted in California, that many of the polls were closed in was it Colorado? I think in Boulder. There are real problems going on that limit people's voting. And Danny, I would put voter ID laws in that same category of sort of these maneuvers to make it harder for we, the American people, to vote. And it's a myth. If you actually look into the data and the studies, you really cannot point to any significant voter impersonations that are, you know, that is claimed as the reason that we need voter ID laws. So having looked into that myself, I can, you know, I am quite confident there is no crisis of voter impersonation, but there is a crisis that's denying us voters the right to be heard. And the voter ID laws play the wrong, they play on the wrong side of this issue. We need to get rid of them and ensure that everyone has a right to vote.
Danny, I appreciate your call. Steve in Savannah, Georgia. Steve, you're on with Dr. Jill Stein.
Thank you very much. I'll tell you, I am, like a lot of my friends, we are, I don't know what to do from a voter standpoint. Hillary, she's such a crook. I just cannot vote for her. The one thing that bugs me the worst about her is that she doesn't speak anything from the heart. It's all scripted, like she's got a playbook in front of her. And that really turns me off. And then you've got the other choice of Mr. Trump, who says whatever, whenever, at any time to try to, coerce people into voting for him. Now, Ms. Stein, I'll be honest with you. I don't know that much about you. I'm going to do some more research tonight. But from what you've said thus far, you seem to be a very hard contrast from the others and somewhat of a breath of fresh air from what we've been dealing with over the last 3 months.
So Steve, would you actually consider voting for the Jill Stein Green Party candidate? Or would you, what about Bernie Sanders' warning that, hey, if you do that, you're electing Donald Trump. How do you feel about it?
I don't think there's enough people that aren't swayed to not vote this way. To be honest with you, I don't think Mr. Sanders, I don't think that has a lot of validity. I just don't. I think overall people, I know my friends, and I'm a 50-year-old business owner here in Savannah. And I know a lot of my friends are in the same boat that I am, that our choices are not the greatest in the world. And a friend of mine this morning told me, he said, I'm going to try to vote for the one who won't get us into World War III. Then that's a tough position to be in, you know, when you're more concerned about going to war as opposed to what will help our country.
A pretty minimal qualification, somebody who will not get us into World War III. Steve, I appreciate your call. Jill, stand by for just a second. Here's Bernie endorsing Hillary Clinton. This is in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, July 12th, promised to stand by her side.
She will be the Democratic nominee for president. And I intend to do everything I can to make certain she will be the next president of the United States.
And as you well know, in Philadelphia at the convention, I mean, he went into crowds of his supporters who did not want him out, and he basically begged them to vote for her, mm-hmm. saying, otherwise it's Trump. Come back to that, because a lot of people have that on their minds.
Great. I mean, this is a movement, you know. It's not a man. It's a movement. That's what the Bernie people said.
Oh, wait. You're saying his movement is your movement?
I thought it was his movement. They are. Well, it's Bernie's movement, but they are a movement. Mm-hmm. And they said, and Bernie said, we're a movement and not a man. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like they came of age politically, and they will not be given marching orders by, you know, by a person. And they are true to their values. And let me just say, you know, democracy needs a moral compass. And silencing ourselves in order to make room for a lesser evil politician who has a track record of service to the war industry, the weapons manufacturers, to the fossil fuel giants, to the big banks. Silencing ourselves as a movement for justice, for peace, for an economy that is green, that we can live with in the future, you know, we should not be silencing ourselves for a lesser evil politician where both parties have been throwing us under the bus. And what Steve said,
even if it
said,
might mean, as Bernie warns, President Trump. I mean, that's what he's concerned about. Other Trump supporters, of course, want that.
Let me just say, we are still several months out. Mm-hmm. So let's not talk about a determined pathway. You know, I think it's a real shame when the political system tries to tell us that we have a choice between a warmonger and a Wall Street proponent.
Bernie Sanders was the outsider. You're now calling him the political system. You're calling Bernie Sanders the political system.
You know, it's Hillary Clinton that is on our ballot right now. It's mm-hmm. not Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. So the choice is between Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. It's the choice between a billionaire, a member of the billionaire club, or an advocate for the billionaire club. And Hillary has a track record. Donald says despicable things. There's no doubt about it. But Hillary has a horrifying track record, and that includes leading the way into Libya, as well as thumbs up on Iraq. It includes the bailouts for the banks. It includes the Wall Street deregulation that she advocated for, the NAFTA, sending our jobs overseas, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership that she was for until Bernie forced her to be against it. But even Terry McAuliffe, her friend, has said, don't worry, she'll change once she's elected. You know, that's what Hillary does. She goes with the political winds, but her track record is awful.
It's
awful.
Cut the military budget in half and close 700 bases, you see.
Well, Hillary wants to start an air war over Syria. And to Steve's point, we don't need an air war with a nuclear-armed power, particularly one that we have been involved in a lot of provocative maneuvers
with. You mean Russia,
recently,
but can the United States cut that far back in the military and still be safe?
You know, it's hard to argue with the fact that massively increasing our military budget has not made us safer. We have spent, according to a recent Harvard study, up to $6 trillion just on Iraq and Afghanistan alone, when you include the ongoing costs of caring for our wounded veterans, who deserve at least that and much more, which they're not getting. But at any rate, $6 trillion, that comes down to $50,000 per American household that we've paid for these regime change catastrophic wars that have created failed states, mass refugee migrations, and worse terrorist threats. So more of the same is not going to help. We're calling for a new kind of offensive in the Middle East, a peace offensive that starts with a weapons boycott and freezing the funding of those countries that insist on continuing to fund terrorist enterprises.
Dr. Jill Stein, Green Party candidate for the presidency, please stand by. This is a woman of parts, also a musician. Behind us right here, American Dream. Somebody's sister was the folk rock duo. She's on guitar and conga drums and singing right there. American Dream in 1999. 2016, she's with us in the studio today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
American Dream.
So
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. With Rocket Mortgage, you can get approved for a mortgage in minutes using a phone or tablet. This completely online process uses cutting-edge technology to make getting a mortgage more convenient than ever before. Now you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button without the frustration of digging through stacks of financial documents. Info at quickenloans.com/onpoint, equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states, NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Green Party candidate for the presidency, Jill Stein, about her run, her Green Party vision, her critique of the way things are now, her vision of how things could be. It's kind of a third party candidate day at On Point. We just had Gary Johnson on today as well. If you missed that or didn't get it, check it out at our website, onpointradio.org. Jill Stein is with me in the studio, and you can see that, if you like, on Facebook Live right now at On Point Radio. What's your question for Dr. Jill Stein? Or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio, at our website, onpointradio.org. We've got questions for you all over the place, Jill Stein. Here's one. Hey, Faye, it says, Jill Stein's, this is about vaccines. Jill Stein's writes, recent pandering to the anti-vaccination crowd is sowing doubts about vaccination safety and validating their completely unfounded suspicions that the FDA is somehow working for shadowy corporations. The other candidate doing this, Hefe writes, Trump. There has been controversy about your comments on vaccination and their safety, their trustworthiness. What do you say about that here today?
Vaccines are a mainstay of public health. Period.
Are they safe?
Yes.
Should people trust them?
Yes.
Why have you raised questions about the trustworthiness, then, of those who oversee that safety?
Well, I didn't raise these issues. This is the Swift Boat attack of 2016. These are efforts to take me off message and to discredit me.
Well, let's just listen to the tape, because a lot of people are asking about this. This is July. You talked to the Washington Post clarifying your position on the ethics of on vaccination.
I think there's no question that vaccines have transformed public health and have been absolutely critical in ridding us of the scourge of many diseases, smallpox, polio, etc. So vaccines are an invaluable medication. Like any medication, they also should be, approved by a regulatory board that people can trust.
So can people, I mean, you raised questions about the trustworthiness of the oversight there. Do you step away from those questions today?
Let me say,
we don't want to swift
as
forward,
a medical doctor,
mm-hmm.
as a medical doctor, I know that all medications have risks and benefits. That's why you want an FDA that is free from the revolving door and the influence of money in politics. We know, for example, that the pharmaceutical industry spent, I think it's $700 million on lobbying between 2011 and 2013.
But and we know the regulatory agencies that oversee vaccination credible and trustworthy today? Because you suggested that they were not. You said the foxes are guarding the chicken coop.
Well, what about Vioxx, okay? What about Vioxx, all right? There's an example of 140,000 cases of heart disease that developed while the FDA refused to release information that they had and that, in fact, the review committee wanted released. It was the FDA authorities that prevented that from happening. As an environmental advocate, I have had, long-going dialogue with regulatory agencies where we're always fighting the power of the industry. You know, lead, for example.
But
we have a
lead crisis
today.
Who wonder about having their children vaccinated. Should they trust those vaccinations?
Yes. And I've been clear about that. Absolutely.
The one other, and then we've got a lot more here, but on the GMO front, you've said you would put a moratorium on genetically modified foods and some pesticides as well. A lot of scientists say, well, look, we've tested these and we don't find evidence that there's a problem with GMO foods. Now, we know there's a lot of public concern about it. Why are you raising the issue, the platform of a moratorium if the scientists say there's not an issue?
Yeah, well, the absence of proof is not the proof of absence. And I can tell you as a physician with special interest and long history in environmental health, the quality of studies that we have are not what you need in order to detect Small influences on large populations, which add up and are significant, you need long-term so-called prospective studies of large populations. They haven't been done. The real concern here is not so much the GMOs as the pesticide exposure, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. And that's what GMOs are. They're basically tolerant. They're foods that are tolerant to high levels of pesticides. Mm-hmm. That is not a good thing. This creates a food system, you know, which is not sustainable, which is not good for the farmers. It's not good for the communities. It's not good for our water supplies. This is not a direction we need to be pushing in. We should have a moratorium until they are proven safe, and they have not been proven safe in the way that they are used.
Those are some of our questions from online. Let's go to on air Frank in Frankfort, Kentucky. You're on with Jill Stein.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, you're on, Frank.
Yeah, I was a Bernie supporter, and I worried when I was thinking about voting for Bernie. It's not just kind of the Trump thing that scares me, but, you know, you have a very large ideological machine that kind of now for the last 8 years has been generating a lot of misinformation. You've got 31 governors in red states. You know, you've got this huge political mechanism that you would have to move, and you have so many things being blocked in terms of states' rights. I live here in Kentucky, and they've been fighting over the gay marriage ban and things like that. And I'm just curious how Dr. Stein would approach working, you know, with states and, you know, where you've got large Tea Party control, you've got very large portions of the population that are ready to believe, you know, pretty much fantastic things about anybody who leans even slightly left.
Frank, let us pick it up right there. I appreciate your call. I mean, this is interesting because, of course, Republicans have made great strides at the state house level, even as Democrats have held the White House and gone back and forth in Congress. You are with the Green Party. Now, here we sit, but the Green Party is not widely organized across the country, anywhere near like Republicans or Democrats. So how do you approach a problem or a circumstance like this?
Great.
With that little on-the-ground presence?
So let me say first that this shift to the right that Frank is talking about in our state houses, our governors, and likewise Congress, because both houses of Congress flipped in the midterm elections following the election of Barack Obama. And that had everything to do with the disappointments that Barack Obama did not turn out to be a president for the people. His first act was to appoint Larry Summers and then to bail out Wall Street. And there was
Treasury
great
Secretary.
Yes, there was great disappointment that, again, Wall Street was being served and not Main Street. So you saw the Democrats being punished, not so much that the Republicans were victorious, but that the Democratic base didn't come out. And unfortunately, this is why the lesser evil thing is not a solution, because people don't come out to vote on behalf of lesser evil politicians who are throwing them under the bus. So the track record actually matters, which is why more Democrats are not the solution to Republicans.
Well, then how do you even begin to engage at the state level with a relatively tiny party?
Great. So, you know, put it this way. To the extent that my campaign moves the ball forward, we're doing that down ballot as well. And we have, you know, hundreds of down ballot candidates, including in Congress and in state houses, and locally for city councils and school committees and all that. So if I was to be elected, we would have a whole body of people who are elected. But furthermore, let me say,
That's a pretty fantastic notion at this point.
That's right, it is. But that's the premise of the question. Mm-hmm. You know, how would you govern? Mm-hmm. How would this work?
But it's also get real, because he's concerned. He's a Bernie guy who's worried about how to use the power of his vote here.
Well, and let me speak to that. You know, that the lesser evil doesn't solve this, because the lesser evil is still a creature of the predatory banks and the war profiteers and the fossil fuel giants. So people have continued to be thrown under the bus under 8 years of a Democratic White House. So they go to the right, because that's the only other option they have. The real solution here is for us to build our power. And whether we get to the White House or not, it's really clear. You know, in this election, we're not just deciding deciding what kind of a world we'll have, but whether we'll have a world or not going forward on climate, on nuclear weapons, on expanding war. We are the ones we've been waiting for. The Democratic Party is not going to solve this for us.
Cincinnati, Ohio, Adam is calling. Hi, Adam. You're on the air with Jill Stein.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Dr. Stein, I want to say first off, you're someone I very much admire as an aspiring physician myself.
Okay.
My question is more towards the side of the rhetoric and political climate. As an Arab American and someone with lots of Muslim family and friends, I really have felt fear this election cycle like I never have before. Mm-hmm. And I just want to ask what you would do as president to help heal the really sort of gaping wounds we have in our country on the subjects of race and religion and ethnicity.
Great. Thank you for making that point. And this is really critical, and it pervades everything from our foreign policy to, you know, our domestic policy, our gun laws, episodes of violence here at home. And we're all caught in the crossfire of this hate and this fear-mongering. And while Donald Trump, you know, says horrible things, Hillary's track record, you know, unleashing the bombs on Iraq, where a million people, largely Muslim people, were killed in the course of that war alone, and then unleashing further violence in Libya. I think it's really important that our policies not be driven by the lobbyists, by the war profiteers, by the bankers who stand to profit from our divisions.
But and how likewise, do you get more racial and ethnic tolerance here at home?
I'm calling for a truth and Reconciliation Commission, actually, to address the underlying climate of fear and racism. Because gun laws alone aren't going to do it. We need to address this climate of fear that makes people, you know, some people on one hand, they cling to their guns because they hold these, you know, these mythologies, these racist mythologies about the black and brown skinned people that they need to be afraid of. We need to create a safe space for a national dialogue, a facilitated dialogue where we can share our stories. And these are stories of racism, of xenophobia, the legacy of slavery, the harm done to Muslim immigrants. We need to have a humanitarian vision here for the country, and we need to begin moving towards that with a facilitated dialogue that, you know, including art and music that actually bring us together and bind us. We need to use all of the resources at our disposal as a human civilization with a shared sense and a shared set of truly human and community values. We need to put that on the table and move that agenda forward.
I hear that theme. I hear that vision. At the same time, you've got people saying, well, what you're going to open a safe space for is... It always comes back to this, I'm sorry, but potential President Trump. Here's author pundit Dan Savage on his podcast, Savage Lovecast. This was in May, saying that a vote for you would be a vote for Trump.
People who suffer are not going to be the pasty white Green Party supporters of pasty white Jill Stein and her pasty white supporters. The people who suffer are going to be people of color, people of minority faiths, queer people, women. Don't do it. Don't throw your vote away on Jill Stein / vote for bank shot style Donald Trump.
Jill Stein says, do not look at it that way. Mark in Lemoyne, Maine. Mark, you're on the air with Jill Stein.
Hi, Tom. I'm a Bernie supporter who is taking Bernie's lead and will be voting for Clinton because I do not want to see Donald Trump get into the White House. And I feel that Dr. Stein can make a massive contribution if she also follows Bernie's lead to try to influence the Democratic Party, move them over as much as possible to her views. We've been here before. We've seen what happened in 2000 when Ralph Nader took away votes from Al Gore. And we all know what happened as a result of that. And I would hate to see that happen again. There is nothing more important at this point than keeping Donald Trump out of the White House.
Let me just say that that strategy, this politics of fear, it has a track record. That politics of fear, you know, has delivered everything that we're afraid of, all the reasons we were given to vote for the lesser evil.
Do you think Al Gore would have gone into Iraq?
Yes, I do. Actually, I do think. And in fact, he endorsed George Bush's war policy. He's on the record on that in public statements. He did support that war. And let me say, right now, we're in a very different time in history. But just look at the track record of the politics of fear. All the reasons you're told to vote for the lesser evil. You didn't want the expanding wars. You didn't want the meltdown of the climate, and all of the above has been a disaster. It's been drill, baby, drill on steroids. Yes, we increased renewable energy, but we massively took the lid off of fossil fuel production. The attack on immigrants, the use of the Espionage Act to attack the press and freedom of the press, all the things we didn't want, virtually, we've gotten on steroids because we allowed ourselves to be silenced. But that aside, we're in a very different moment in history now. When Ralph Nader ran, he was quite ahead of the game. But right now, most Americans have rejected these candidates and are looking for someone else. And let me just say,
what do you mean by rejected? The polls, they're way ahead of you.
On the other hand, people do not know about me. Donald Trump had the benefit of $2 billion worth of free media. That was about 2 or 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Hillary had $1 billion. Bernie Sanders had about half as much of that.
Plus
I've had
a lot of
virtually
paid.
Zip, mm-hmm. and I've come up in the polls from nowhere mm-hmm. to as high as 5, 6, and even 7% just on the strength of support for what I'm talking about. Even Hillary's supporters don't support her. According to polls, they don't really like her. They just don't like her opponent, the alternative. And the same is true for Trump. They don't really like him. They just don't like, they really don't like Hillary as the alternative. And people are clamoring for something else at majority levels. What's wrong with this picture? Democracy is not what we don't want. Democracy needs an affirmative agenda. It needs a moral vision. We have to build our way forward. You know, there's a movement out there, which I heard about recently, called I'll Vote for Jill If You Will. And it's essentially a pledge for people to just stand up and be counted. How big would this vote be if people didn't have to worry about an unintended consequence of their vote? Those names are accumulating. Everyone who signs up agrees to tell two other people. You know, we're early. We can get the word out. We don't have to split the vote. We have the numbers and the power to potentially flip the vote. We the people are the underdogs. We should be the top dogs in an economy that's working for us. We just could be the top dogs in this election. I urge people, go to jill2016.com and join the team, or Dr. Jill Stein, that's DR, no period, and join us on social media. Let's stand up with the courage of our convictions. The minute we do, we are unstoppable.
Dr. Jill Stein, the Green Party nominee for the presidency, in the studio with us today and on Facebook Live. Jill Stein, thanks very much for being here.
Great to be with you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.